Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your hosts, David Von Strawn and Leslie M. Scott Jones. And now, here's David.
Hello, Charlottesville! It is Sunday! It is 10 o'clock. It is so nasty outside. Sunday, you nasty. You just nasty. You know what you did. Can't be doing that here. Ew. Just nasty. It's so gross outside. It is March the 3rd. It has come in like a lion. Yeah, and
you
now we're
wet
here.
Lion.
It was windy and it was gusty
like
and it
wet
was
dog it was, in here for it was some rainy. Reason. I don't know what's going on.
It's probably me. I've been doing a lot of training.
Okay.
Lovely those locations.
What's up?
Hey.
What's
up? Doing. All right, well, let's get right to it because we got a lot to talk about. We got
do.
A lot of wonderful guests.
So much.
This guy.
Do I? I have run out of introductions for this individual. Like, he is everything. He is a powerhouse in the realm of community theater here in Central Virginia. Let's just get to it. Edward Work White, director of Hello Dolly, coming to Four County Players, are opening on March 15th, woo, going through April 14th. 4 damn weeks.
That's actually 5.
5 damn weeks of musical. You have no excuse, people.
And the number of cast members who said the same thing, they're like, I just now realize it's 5 weekends. Like, I knew the dates.
You're locked in.
That's how you get
you
them.
Already agreed to the extension.
Yeah. Gotcha, bitch.
You're in it.
Yeah.
Take it.
So that's the poster, as adorable as it could be. Oh, Dolly, what have you gotten yourself into?
Hello, Dolly.
Yeah, it's a lot of great people in this show. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm biased because I was in the wonderful Ragtime with Edward Work White. That happened in fall of last year, which seems so long ago, but it wasn't. But a lot of people, Heather Powell, Kristen Baltes, they've taken their talents to South Beach, aka Four County Players.
Barbersville.
Same thing. Barbersville.
You didn't get the LeBron South reference?
Same thing.
The Barbersville diet.
Nobody got the LeBron reference in the art world. They're like, what is he talking about? But you pretty much have like the all-star group of like Central Virginia, like technical aspect. Yes. Performing in your musical, and that was by no mistake. You basically poached your way into a killer production. So talk about the arrangement. Talk about the All Star cast. Talk about this version of Hello Dolly, because the art world has seen Hello Dolly before, but not the Edward Work White version of Hello Dolly.
Well, thank you guys for having me. We are thrilled. So in 46 years, Four County has somehow never done Hello Dolly, which you think would have happened at some point, you know.
What?
Yeah.
What?
I know. Or The Matchmaker, the original Thornton Wilder play. So
what?
It's kind of funny to think that this will be on the main stage for the first time. I know. We're like, really?
What? That's
really
interesting.
I know, it is interesting. So we are thrilled to finally get to do this show, which, you know, made its big kind of Broadway revival in the last year or so. So kind of back in the public eye, which has been very fun.
What do you think lends itself to that? I'm sorry to interrupt, but what the revival? Like, why do you think that Hello Dolly is just like picked back up and people are start reperforming it again?
You know, it's interesting. We were talking about this, and I think, you know, theater gives us so many opportunities to feel so many different things. As we know, having just done Ragtime, and you're about to go into the
too many feels
show, which is very exciting. We've
too
got all
many
the feels.
Feels,
and this is, you know, a show that I think is all about the joy, which is great. Which I think we need to feel sometime too. And there's so much crap going on in the world these days, and
I think
theater allows us to process that. But at the same time, this gives us a chance just to have some fun and have some joy and kind of make the case for a good time. It's very optimistic, and that was one of the things that I think was so appealing about Dolly when it first came out. They actually sent it on a national tour, sent it to Tokyo, because they thought it just really captured at the time the optimism of the country and this kind of spirit that they wanted to project kind of worldwide of what the U.S. was, and I'm not sure that's where we are currently. But
when,
that's
when
what we're
did
trying
it
to do
first come out?
What's that?
When did Dolly first come out?
So I'm trying to remember. So the 60s. So the Merchant of Yonkers was written by Thornton Wilder in 1938,
mm-hmm.
adapted to The Matchmaker in the 1950s. When I say 1954, mm-hmm. and then Dolly was 1967. Something like that. Yeah. So 1960s, Carol Channing. And the funny thing is when he wrote The Merchant of Yonkers, it was very centered around Horace Vandergelder, the half a millionaire, and sort of his story.
Really?
And then audiences really responded to Dolly as this kind of side character who was brought in as the matchmaker. So then they rewrote it with her as the kind of focal point.
So she's the Maud of musicals, basically.
Yes. Maud.
Then there's Dolly.
And then there's Dolly.
Then there's Dolly.
And then there's Dolly. And then there's Dolly.
And Carol
so, so when you've got a piece like this
yeah.
where... And you know, it's, so many musicals like this, mm-hmm. originally a short story, then a play, then made into a musical. How mm-hmm. far back in the source material do you go in your preparation and research for the piece?
Yeah, I mean...
Like, did you read Merchant of Yonkers?
Matchmaker, yes. Didn't and I've read stuff about the Merchant of Yonkers and sort of the history of how it kind of transposed over time, but you know, read The Matchmaker, went back, which interesting has other characters who are not in Hello Dolly, of course, like a lot of these things that a little farther thing, like a lot of the shows that get adapted over time, characters that weren't there, they got kind of absorbed by others and things like that that kind of changed over time, you know, which has been cool, but yeah, and then even then, you know, we've been trying to sort of find, you know, kind of what is our take on the story and sort of how do we not have it be what maybe folks have seen elsewhere and give them something unique and fun
yeah.
as well.
So how many cast members?
25.
Damn!
On that little main stage.
That's a lot.
Around.
Ain't nothing little about Four Counties main stage.
Not just on the stage. Yeah, like that's a lot of cats to herd.
That's a lot of hats. A lot of hats to herd and a lot of cats to herd and a lot of things. A lot of parasols. Yeah, no, but it is a wonderful. I mean, speaking of, I know I use the word joy, but speaking of joy, I mean, it's a great group of artists. They've just been kind of gung ho from the start. We've got some new faces to Four Counties, some folks that we've seen, you know, at Live Arts and other theaters, Belmont Arts Collaborative, who are on the Four County stage for the first time. Some familiar faces as well, which has been great. So it's been really fun to see everybody come together.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So what has been the hardest part of directing a musical this big?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's always the part of how do you sort of adapt it to our stage. I mean, it's a show where typically with a lot of like wing space and fly space, you know,
yeah.
train stations fly in and here comes the train and all of that. But I'm always kind of like, I feel like you can throw money at a show. Like you can, you know, rent the fancy car from like whatever company, but it's like, what can we create?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing about Dolly. Dolly like pulls herself up by her bootstraps.
Yeah.
Like life has thrown her all these obstacles and she just continues to persevere. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've tried to interject. Like, how do we do this? Like,
yeah.
How do we create something out of nothing and give people that like magical feeling, even if we can't bring in a full size train or we can't
right.
bring in, you know, a million different set changes? Like, how do we take people like all across New York
and right.
to all these different kind of exciting locations and take them on the journey with us, which I love. Like, I think that's the fun part, is how do we create something out of nothing and, you know, take people there with us. Which is cool.
Well, and I think you're the perfect director for this show to do that, because the other shows that you've directed, that's exactly what you've done. You've taken something that people are expecting the spectacle,
right.
and given them a spectacle, but not the one they expected.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Like,
yeah.
I'm just thinking of the Charlie Brown, like. Snoopy's yeah. house, like literally when that came on stage, I was like, oh my God, he literally made like, oh wow, that's so cool. So I mean, you're a master at doing that. This is a perfect choice for you.
Thank you. And it's fun. We've got a great team of designers. Carrie Moran, who you all know and love, no stranger to the theater community, is doing our set. And so she's done a big, beautiful set that I think even the color palette will be unexpected. I think folks like think Dolly and they think red, You may like or may not. We gotta get the people in there, but you may or may not see her in a red dress. You may or may not see her, you know, and those are little things, but it's kind of even then, like, how do we, you know, how do we make it our own, which is fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm interested in themes because I feel like a lot of people talk about why we do theater in the curtain times that we live in, and there's a lot of talk predominantly because we are a progressive democratic like station. There's a lot of talk about how do we attain the soul of the country back, and how do we attain the qualities that we love about each other? How do we get that stuff back? And Clinton's given me the dive, which is the rap signal. So I want to ask more about that, the drop signal. You know what I'm talking about. It's not a sandwich, it's a wrap. But for right now. All right.
We've got a 7 minute. He's coming up.
So we're going to talk about themes. We're going to be right back. Edward Warwick White talking about Hello Dolly. This is Homegrown Drop.
Yes, yes. No, I'm not going to do that. No. Hey, this is A.D. Carson. You're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
12 minutes past the hour, if you're just tuning in. This is Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm David. That's Leslie. Clinton on the boards. You got your producer, HNIC of Homegrown. Edward Warwick White is in the house talking about Hello Dolly coming to Four County Players March 15th through April 14th. 5 damn weeks!
That's a lot of shows.
Of optimistic musical excitement.
That is a lot of shows. I'm sure your cast was just delighted when they
figured
that out.
Yeah. Hey, man. Like, you sign on the line. You see the agreement. Right. The agreement. Not the contract. The agreement. But themes. Optimism. Getting the country's soul back. Because that's what... I kind of challenged that theme because I kind of challenged where the soul's country was at in the beginning.
Sure.
But, I mean, the idea of optimism, the idea of having that hope and that optimism during the Obama years, during the Reagan years even. I mean, granted, it was in capitalism and greed, but, I mean, people were all for the same thing. People were all looking towards a higher horizon. So talk about that. Talk about the theme of...
Not the Reagan years.
Not the Reagan years.
So
not
the Reagan years. I was Hello Dolly like the Reagan years.
Sure. But like you said, positive.
Well, Horace Vandegelder was really into deregulation.
Right. Totally. Just totally. Yeah, yeah.
There's that whole song.
Right.
Get the government gone. Get the government out.
That was later rewritten as It Takes a Woman and all that.
Oh my God.
No, which that's the kind of the whole thing that's cool about. I mean, Dolly, even the character, was such a progressive character and ahead of her time. Like, really one of the kind of original, written like almost like a suffragette in a lot of ways, which a lot of, you know, shows always kind of put the stock and the kind of hero piece in the male character. And Dolly, even by nature, I mean, her mission when she sets out to marry Horace Vandegelder, and she says for his money, but it's so she can take it and spread it to the community.
Right.
She's like, money doesn't mean a damn thing unless you trinkle it around like rainwater so other things can grow.
Yeah.
Which I think is like, I mean, what we need. Like, how do we sort of help the people?
Mm-hmm.
She sees this unhappy person.
Yeah.
And she's like, I can make him happy, but then he also can make other people happy because he's just kind of sitting on top of his money and not doing anything with it. And of course, like musical theater, they fall in love along the way. Like,
of course.
It's sort of like, oh, well, this will be fine. And she's also... like, her perseverance, I mean, the idea of second chances and we can turn our lives around. Like, she's someone who kind of faded out of the public light and just kind of resolved to, like, I'm going to stay at home with the cat and have my hot toddy every night. But she's like, I can get back out there and I can do some good and, you know, make other people happy, but also make myself happy.
Yeah.
At the same time, which I think has actually been really... kind of the powerful part along the journey is like, yeah, it's big and it's beautiful and there are hats and it's like, you know, in your face, but there's a lot of heart to it, which I think has been kind of the special part, I think, for the cast as well. And I'm excited to be able to give people.
And people love hats.
That as well. Yeah, I mean, totally. Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Hell
yeah.
Hats are fun.
It's a lighting nightmare, but it's like, you know.
With the cat in the hat hats.
Right.
People love those hats.
Totally.
Yeah. You had something to say? That was
So that beautifully leads me into a question that I had that I wanted to ask for you. So I'm. You know, like as with many people my age in my advanced decrepitude, I'm familiar with this show.
Advanced decrepitude. Are you wearing bifocals?
I know. I'm like, what am I looking at here? I'm like, it's
like, he's not wearing bifocals. So, I am.
No, that's because I do the old natural bifocals. Yeah. I just take the glasses off.
Right.
And put them back on. Yeah. Take the glasses off, put them back on.
I'm playing trombone over here. Okay. Right.
I have to say very quickly, I'm not as good as my father who can do the flick with one finger and have the glasses just hang on one ear.
Oh, wow.
And then flick them back. It's really, kind of scary, but also impressive.
We're gonna have to, you know, get him to teach us that, because that's...
Right.
So
we're learning so much.
It's a thing.
So one of the things that I missed when I first saw this show for years was the stakes for Dolly. Like, and part of it was just it was a cultural difference because this show is so much about one. It's about it's a very New York show, and it's a very New York show of a particular time. There's this whole type of thing about being a person in society, like you're in society or you're out of society, and so like Dolly would come back to the restaurant and it was like, hey, she's back. And I'm like, why is it such a big thing that she's back? I don't understand, because I didn't understand the idea of like she's in Yonkers, she's away from official society, and also I didn't get that just what you were talking about, that this is a story about a woman who is bringing herself back into society, who's taking herself out of the sort of self-imposed social retirement. How do you breach the and I bet you that I'm not alone in terms of not getting that, because it's so
different. Very salient point, because I remember actually my viewing of Hello Dolly, and I was like, I never want to say like she didn't struggle, but I never felt like from a viewer's perspective that there was really, like you said, any
that
stakes,
there was
like
anything wrong in her life.
No gun to her head, like anything like that. Like, so yeah, I just kind of lost that. So yeah, to Quentin's point.
Yeah. So how do you communicate that?
No, that's a great question. Well, it's interesting, and like, I mean, going back to the idea of like the show, and there's so much kind of razzle dazzle and razzmatazz, but there are these great moments in the show, and this is honestly what we did for auditions, and I thought was so important. There are these great monologues that Dolly has where she basically talks to her deceased husband Ephraim, and there are these beautiful moments where like she really takes down the mask. Like, and you see the soul of this woman, because so much she's meddling, and she's going 24/7, and she's on to the next thing. And that can come across very, I think, even cold in the wrong way, because it's like, I'm listening to Clint, but then I'm like, here's my card and so on, versus like, she's literally doing what she has to do to get it done and like, you know, make a living and survive like as a widow during this time. But when she takes down the mask, you see this like vulnerable, in a lot of ways, unhappy. Oh, sorry. And this very sort of like...
No, just get out in front of the mic.
Okay, in front of it. There we go. Yeah, there you go. This sort of vulnerable, in a lot of ways, you know, unhappy, you know, person who's kind of devoted her life to making other people happy.
And I guess that's our handicap of being in a generation that never had to deal with widowhood from a woman's perspective.
Right.
In that frame, that when you become a widow, like all of your social like status is kind of stripped away, and you kind of like lose your sense of identity.
Yeah, I mean, if every Saturday night for her was going to the Harmonia Gardens and dancing with her husband, she's not going to go and like hang out at the bar.
Right.
I mean, because she didn't. I mean,
she
literally
just can't go and kick it on silverlinings.com after your husband like passes away. Yeah. Like, it don't work like that.
No, there's no Christian mingle for her. She's got to go. She's got to go, you know, chill at home. And I mean, it's
sometimes
it's
I sing to myself when
you know,
right on. So yeah, razzmatazz, pyrotechnics, go.
not too many. No. Well, and that's part of it too. It's kind of the fun thing to like. I mean,
Fort County's a big stage.
You know, with a show that is kind of, you know, old school in nature, I think trying to honor that in some ways. Like, you know, like keep that. It like in the way, like I always think of, you know, the images of folks backstage where they're like pulling the sandbags.
Yes.
And so I'm like, I mean, like, how do we sort of infuse it with, you know, it wouldn't be technically crazy and things like that. Like, people would be kind of coming and going, and how do we use the cast in fun ways?
Yeah.
And,
less is more.
Yeah, exactly. Which is fun. And I mean, and the thing that I think has been, you know, that's been cool. I mean, we made the tagline for the show, "The world is full of wonderful things," which if you blink in the show, you'll miss the line. Like, it's not a big pivotal moment. Like, one character says it in passing. But like, that's kind of what I want people to leave and think about. Like, there's so much garbage happening and terrible things on the daily basis, and we look at the news and we're like, how in the world?
how is this
dystopian nightmare like real, right? When you're just like, weren't we just like okay, like a little bit? I mean, we weren't, but like, so like, that's what I want, you know, people to have that hope, because if we don't have hope, then I don't know what we have. I mean, we've just got to try to, you know, keep fighting and hang on and persevere and pull ourselves up and pull each other up and spread the wealth and the love. And
yeah,
you know, that's what I'm going to try to do.
So may I make a quick confession,
please?
Yes. Uh-oh. That when
you don't,
I heard,
love the show. No, just kidding.
Oh no, it's quite the opposite. Actually, okay. It's quite the opposite.
Okay.
When I heard that you guys were doing Hello Dolly, for months, I have been fighting against all forms of self-respect and concerns about tokenism to keep myself from going up and begging you to just let me walk on stage and do the Louis Armstrong moment from the movie. To just, hello! It would just be worth it.
There you go.
Wow.
Just the one cameo.
So what
cameo.
Do you think, Edward? You want to put him in?
Cameo?
Yeah. Cameo, why not?
And just not tell the cast.
Not tell the cast?
Nope. Just get their reaction.
Yeah.
Especially don't tell Dolly. She comes down the stairs and is like,
Kate would love that.
Which was always so funny in the movie, because he introduces himself. He's like, this is Lewis.
Yes,
and she's kind of like, I know. Yeah. I haven't been gone that long.
Right.
It's like,
I haven't been under a rock, dude.
Right.
Like,
yeah. No, there you go.
No, right. Seriously, cameo. Oh, I think we should make that happen.
There you go. I love it.
Well, that's not a sandwich. That's a wrap, man. I gotta call it a day.
Understand.
You know, I love you.
I love you.
And
such
I can't wait to have you back on Homegrown again when
can't
you do
you
your
back.
Next performance.
Yay.
And yeah, it's gonna be bonkers. March 15th through April 14th.
Can't wait.
Get your tickets. Get a friend. Do what you gotta do. Do it right now. Online?
Online.
FourCountyPlayers.org.
Yes.
4CP.org.
If you want to talk to a human, you can even call the box office.
Oh my God, you can actually call box office.
Yeah, you
someone
can.
Will talk to
call and talk
or
to
leave
Ro,
a message.
Y'all.
Call on Ro. Call on Dolly.
There you go.
All right.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you so much.
Much love.
All right. Is it time for them artistic events?
That list of stuff.
All right. All right. Oh, yeah, that's a big old list. Here are just some of the artistic events. People are like, haven't you done this happening this week? Currently running through April 13th, the American Shakespeare Center presents its 2019 Actors Renaissance Season, featuring Henry IV, Part 1, The Merry Wives of Windsor by William Shakespeare, and Page Hates Fun, Arden of Famersham, at the Blackfriars Theatre in Stanton. Shakespeare! Last chance! GTP, that's Guerrilla Theater Productions, does Ibsen's Hedda Gabler with a Southern twist. March 8th through March 9th at Victory Hall Theater in Scottsville. Last chance at Tandem.
So that was the last chance to see it at Guerrilla Theater, but they're also going to do it March 8th and March 9th at Victory Hall Theater in Scottsville.
Thank you for the clarification. Clinton Johnson, executive producer, HNIC. Homegrown Productions. Last chance! The Tandem Friends School! Upper School Drama Program presents 26 Pebbles, a drama about people recovering after trauma. Currently running now through March 7th, the UVA Drama Department presents the drama about a family clashing over issues of race and privilege. Stick Fly! In the Ruth Kaplan Theater.
Hey, my friend JJ's in it.
A lot of my friends are in it.
Well, yeah. A lot of people in it.
It's going to be great. Currently running, First Fridays features openings of art exhibits at gallery spaces in and around downtown. Check out these openings. Lee Christmas Halstead shows her waterscapes at the Charlottesville Writer House. Susan Patrick shows her watercolors and multimedia drawings in Debris at New Dominion Bookshop. Photographer turned painter Cassandra Clausen presents her exhibit Flow at VMDO Architects. P.
Pete Morris's acrylic painting show, Northern Neck Nature, shows at Top Knot Studio. And that's it, but there's more coming. It's awesome. March 5th, abrupt ending. March 5th, Beverly Bouvier and the Dancing Cajun Queens do a Mardi Gras drag show at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. March 5th. Again, this is a lot of March 5th. All right, this is all March 5th. Michael Crone works out his new band for Mardi Gras at the Ixhart Park. Catch a Cajun with a little punk sprinkled on with Jolie Filet.
Yes.
At the Tin Whistle Irish Pool. Louis Smith and friends at Fellini's. This is March 5th. March 5th.
6th.
Jefferson Madison Regional Children's Library. Gwyneth Librarian. Glynis Welt. I'm going to get this done. I took a week off. I'm getting back into
apparently,
it.
Apparently,
it was a lot that went on that week.
More coffee needs to happen for David's mouth to work properly.
We will get to that. Glynis Welt from the Gordon Avenue branch comes to UVA's Fralin Art Museum for Pictures and Pages, where she uses movement, songs, and even puppets to connect kids to arts.
Puppets.
A puppets. March 7th, the UVA MFA reading series continues with grad students Michelle Gottenschmidt.
Gottschultz.
I tried way too hard on that. Gottschultz.
Really did.
And Justin Keenan reading from their work at New Dominion Bookshop. Michelle, I am so sorry. Please come on the show.
He does it to everyone, Michelle. It's not you.
It really is everybody. March 8th through March 30th, The Wolves at Live Arts Theater. Catch that show. Great people are in it. Great people are producing it and directing it. March 9th, Laugh Yo Ass Off presents The After Show, the comedy talk show hosted by Chris Allen and Winston Hodges at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. That sounds dope.
It really does.
What's up,
Chris? Why don't you come back on the show, man?
He's retired now. And for your music options this week...
Today, Tara Mills and Jimmy Stelling at Batesville Market. First Presbyterian Church presents a free recital of the winners of their Wednesday Morning Music Club competition for youth musicians at 2. Thank you. Belisa presents Brazilian jazz with guests Alejandro and Leonardo Lucchini at Glasshouse Winery at 2 p.m. UVA cellist Nicholas Rupert gives a recital at Old Cabell Hall tomorrow. Onyx Manor at Rapture on the 6th. Oh, yeah. LG and Friends at the Whiskey Jar on the 7th. Cellist and founder of the Seaville Chamber Music Festival celebrates the festival's 20th year. There's been a festival of chamber music for 20 years and we don't know about it. All right, whatever. With the guest violinist James Ennis at Piedmont Virginia Community College, V. Earl Dickinson Building. Post 65 performs Breakers and Lynchburg's. Okay, performs with Breakers and Lynchburg's Good Dog Nigel at Ix Art Park. Face Made for Radio and then Tanya Ray and the T-Ray Band at the Whiskey Jar. Sam Bush and Guyan Pratt at the Hive. That's all on the 7th. On the 8th, Crew de Bayou at Glasshouse Winery. Functional Electric performs with Sisters and Brothers at Washington, D.C.'s Surprise Attack at the Ix Art Park. Michael Wilner and Enemies at the Whiskey Jar open mic night at Rapunzel's Coffee and Books. Lord Nelson at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. Leisure Suit Larry at Holly's Diner.
They keep rocking Holly's Diner, yeah.
Leisure Suit Larry. Okay. On the 9th, Mojo Pie at Albemarle Cider Works, Midlife Crisis at James River Brewery, Anlar at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub, The Pollux at the Batesville Market. Every Sunday, Travis Elliott at Rapture. Every Monday, Bluegrass Jam at the Fort Ports Roots Music School. Seafoot, Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music. Weekly Open Jam at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Say that 5 times fast. Tango Music with Miles Pierce and Maddie Metcalf at the Bebedero. Red and the Romantic at the Whiskey Jar. Songwriter Night at the Local every Tuesday. Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebedero, baby. The Ragged Mountain String Band at the Whiskey Jar. The Traditional Session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Wednesday, Bachata Fusion at the X Park. The Mike Krasinski and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Every Wednesday and Thursday, Josh Mayo open mic night at 1221 Market Street. Every Thursday, Humberto Sales and Vincent Dorn do Gypsy Rumba at the Bebedero. And every Thursday, John Durth at Miller's. All right.
Every Thursday, you just gotta come down to Dearth. That is some, but not all of the events that's going down in Charlottesville, the new and burgeoning Charlottesville. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Homegrown. Drop.
Hey, what's what's up, everybody? This is Chris Allen. You're listening to Homegrown. This is 94.7.
Oh, 30 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Homegrown 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm David. That's Leslie. Clinton on the boards. We got Galen Curry up in the house today.
How's it going?
It's going well, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great.
He is one of the three Currys, some but not all of the Currys. This side of the glass.
Okay, so my question is,
yeah,
you're all brothers?
No. I'm a cousin. The other two are brothers.
Oh. Yeah.
So you're not like Chevelle. You're like...
No.
So how'd you decide to use your last name?
Well, they're also Currys. Our dads are brothers, so it's legit. It's not... You know,
okay.
It's, yeah,
all right.
It's legit.
All right. I was just checking.
Yeah. So you thought it was a take on like Steph and Aisha Curry?
Right.
Yeah.
We get asked that a lot, and it destroys our Google searches. They show up a lot in music, but...
People show up at the club. Wait a minute, you know, that's not who was in the picture.
The release concert for This Side of the Glass is going down to Southern Cafe and Music Hall March 23rd. But, however, although you can buy it on the Curry's website, digital download or hard copy website?
It's www.thecurriesmusic.com.
Booyah.
Yeah, and it just dropped 2 days ago.
Just
Friday
dropped.
Is the official release date.
So oh my god!
Fresh out of the oven.
That's lovely.
Yeah,
right on. So, without further ado, should we play some?
Yeah, let's play
some
music.
Should we play some Curry jams? Are you good with that?
Sweet. Yeah,
Mr. Galen.
Yeah.
All right. We're gonna do Fault Lines.
Sounds good.
That's cool with you. All right. This is the Currys playing Fault Lines on Homegrown.
Does it itch you like a freight train? Does it burn you like fire? Does it empty you from inside like a spoonful of desire? Do you rage in opposition? Do you privately admire? As a child, when the world won its prize, and I knew you in our school days. We're all fighting for our lives as we grew into the young men staking claims and choosing sides. Through, wash them out, and is there somewhere I'll find you? All these fault lines. Snake eyes at the first toss, and you lit out for the hills. Everybody
that was the Currys with Fault Lines from This Side of the Glass. Just came out.
I love your harmonies.
Oh, thank you.
I love close harmonies like that. Like
harmonies, I'm in. Totally.
Yeah.
Totally in.
Yeah. Cool. You know, because when you're singing, it's hard to do that. And, you know, and Clinton and I have both sung in different realms. So it's like, so we get how
You'll
hard it is to maintain
as,
that.
As Louis Armstrong, I heard.
Yeah,
that's great.
Hello. Can you talk about harmonies? Can you talk about how important is it to the group? How much you work on it? Is it difficult to try to find stuff that's more than just your basic every other third? And you know,
yeah. Well, we're all kind of we all write for all the albums, and we kind of started out as writing separately. So we're all singers and guitarists primarily. And then once we got together and started playing as a unit, we decided to kind of diversify and branch out a bit. So I started playing bass, and Tommy, the one who looks like a Wookiee there on the front of the cover, he plays the mandolin and guitar, and then Jimmy in the middle plays the acoustic guitar. And, you know, singing brings so much energy to a song. Like, you know, instrumental songs are great, but when a voice is in it, it just, like, adds personality and soul to it. Mm-hmm. And when everyone can be singing, it just, like, you know, it bolsters the whole experience. And so for us, especially on this record, we try to all three of us be singing as much as we possibly can, mm-hmm. and kind of, you know, increasing the energy and the vibe there for all the tunes that we can. And we do. There is usually one primary songwriter for the tunes, and then the others will kind of come in and we'll add the harmonies from there.
Now, when I explored your website not too long ago, I noticed that there was like this. And some of the videos that were on it, there's like this rustic appeal to your music. However, there is a high production value and there's a sleekness to it. It's like neo-Southern type feel. Can you talk about that kind of, first of all, I want to know where you recorded this thing.
Yes. And who mixed and mastered it?
Exactly. And
we recorded this one at a farmhouse in upstate New York, actually. The guy who's playing, we're a trio primarily, and we play a lot as a trio, but we have a full band that we play with as well, and the extra electric guitars we play in that band also produce this record. And he has a farmhouse in upstate New York, and we kind of holed ourselves up there actually a year ago, last March, and there was a crazy snowstorm, so we were kind of all snowed into this house, and it was kind of this romantic month of just recording. But it's a farmhouse. It wasn't built as a recording studio. So whenever someone was tracking, everyone else had to just kind of sit there quietly. So we read a lot of books and like looked at our phones a lot quietly because there wasn't a soundproof area. So we kind of wanted this one to be a little bit different and have that kind of rustic vibe. But then also we brought it back down to Virginia after we were done and mixed it with Stuart Myers in Richmond. And he's great. So he kind of took the we wanted the rustic feel during the recording, but then he kind of polished some of the some of the rough ends, some of the stuff that wasn't working quite right, and we added a couple extra layers. That's where we added the Hammond for that song, and just kind of like tightened it up and tried to increase the production value a bit.
I'm getting the sound. All right, so we're gonna talk more about the Currys music because it's dope. And we should hear more about it because the guy's here. This is Homegrown.
Drop. No, he's here. We're going to talk about other music.
Corey Bix from Victory Hall Opera. You're listening to Homegrown, a show about local arts on 94.7 WPVC.
41 minutes past the hour of just tuning in. You're listening to Homegrown 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm David. That's Leslie Clinton on the boards. Galen Curry is in the house plugging that new Curry's joint, This Side of the Glass. Release concert goes out to Southern Cafe and Music Hall March 23rd, where you can hear him jam out the new tracks. Now, this is album number
3
for the Currys. New stuff did you try on this album or want to implement on this album that you haven't done in previous albums?
Yeah, well, our first record was kind of just, we had just kind of gotten together as a group, and it was basically just the songs that none of us had recorded before that we liked. Mm. And it didn't feel as much of like a cohesive effort. It was just kind of like, here are the songs that we have, let's record them and put them out.
Right.
And the second one kind of was that again, but just kind of better because we, you know, we were more experienced in the studio. We were getting better at songwriting. We were getting better at playing together.
Yeah.
And then for this one, and we recorded both of those in Louisa, Virginia.
Woohoo!
So
LCBA.
There you go. So we
class of 98.
For this one, we wanted to do something different. So that's why we went up to the. We got a new producer, Sam Whedon, who also plays on it, and we just, you know, these are kind of more. This album feels more like a whole unit rather than I want to say it's a concept album. It's not quite that grandiose, but it feels more.
No,
connected.
It can be. If you want it to be grandiose, it can be. It sounds like you put your foot in it. You gotta,
I want it to be grandiose, but not pretentious.
Right, exactly. That? Yeah, walk that line, baby. Yeah, right, gotta yeah. walk that line.
But you had something to say.
So when I was a kid, I always imagined that. Like band, I thought that there was a particular process. Like bands would go, they would record an album, and then they would go and they would tour, and then they'd write until they had enough material, and right. then they'd go back into the studio and then record. And then much later, I heard of like bands like, okay, we've got to do an album. Then they go and they would write stuff in the studio at the time to record, which just seemed like wacky to
yeah.
me. That like. You know, like, oh, we need to have a, you know, 10 songs at the end of like these 2 days. Boom. So what was it for you guys? Did you bring material with you into the studio or at least I imagine there was maybe a mix of things. How much was it creation at the time? And
yeah. It was definitely a mix for this one. The thing that really prohibits you from doing all the writing in the studio now is we're an independent band. We don't have the support of a record label. So we don't, and even now, because record labels are kind of on the way down,
yeah.
The problem with writing in the studio completely is there's no budget for it. Like, you're paying by the hour. And that was one of the reasons at the farmhouse, it was kind of we could stretch our legs and be there for a whole month. And that was kind of part of the point. So we had more time to write than we would in a kind of a traditional studio. But that said, the only way we really can make a living doing this is by playing all the time. We have to be touring all the time and performing all the time. So we're always trying new songs out and we're trying new things. And some of these songs were written 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago. And the ones we liked the best from that period, we've kept. And then a couple of them were brand new additions into the in the studio. Like there were three little short ones that are all less than... Two minutes and 30 seconds, some of them are even shorter, that we all had them, like each of us had one, and we were like, you know, it'd be fun and add some personality to this is if we, you know, recorded these, even though we have no idea how yeah. they're going to turn out. And we ended up including all of them. And now that we're kind of rehearsing for this tour, we're playing them live a little bit differently than they turned out on the album, but they're nice little,
Little
nuggets, you know, it's like a little bit that kind of like ties it all together.
Yeah, there's a singer-songwriter whom I really like named Cozy Sheridan.
Okay.
She will. One of the things that I really like is that she'll do that. Like on her, like she writes the songs that she writes, and sometimes they're a minute, and sometimes they're standard single length 3-4 minutes.
Yeah.
But sometimes they're two. I don't think I've ever seen that before, and I really just like the feeling. It gives some variety to the album, and like there's nothing padded. And if she's got like a minute of a good material, like that song is a good minute.
Yeah.
And then she's on to the next one.
And I like that because if you have a solid minute, then you always want to go back and listen to that, you know, because
yeah,
it's like it catches you. If you can, if you have a song that's a minute, like you throw a guitar solo in there, throw a little bridge in there, and you can bolster that to 3 minutes if you want. But then there's so much fluff in there, it's nice to just be able to, you know, condense it down and. That's it. This is what I'm giving you, and this is all gold.
And by the way, may I please thank you for ending Fault Lines? After because, again, my increasing decrepitude, after years and years and years of yeah. listening to pop music, I'm done with the fade-out. I'm done with write an ending.
I hate it.
Write an ending.
I don't want to disappoint you, but the this is the first record we've actually included a fade-out on. We have a fade-out on, I think, 2 tracks. So just listen to maybe the first 5 tracks, then, you know, tune out.
No, but it gets hard, like, when you're doing people's music, like, you know, because I just did an Aretha tribute, and it's hard because, like, 7 of the songs that we did, the endings, when she did them, they yeah. were fade-outs, and it's like,
it's up to
all
you
right,
then.
Now
yeah.
we got to figure out how we're going to end this yeah. puppy. Like, what yeah. are we doing? All right, what are we doing? Like,
Sock it to me. Respect.
And a lot of it was literally turn into the drummer and going, yeah, we're doing the bridge one more time.
Do something cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what right now we're doing rehearsals right now, and that's. We're trying to figure out how to end the two songs that we fade out. So cool. Good choice, guys.
Yeah. It's always nice when you do that to yourself.
Exactly.
It's great.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was watching, I forget what I was watching. I was watching something and some guy, I guess maybe a documentary, somebody like Tom Petty or somebody was talking about, like, he was talking to Mick Jagger from the Rolling Stones. I was like, yeah, you know, it's like, did you guys. Like, you got how many really great singles and how many really great songs? Did you guys ever write any endings to any of those songs?
Right. Nope. Nope, sure didn't. Who needs an ending? The music never stops.
So, release concert, Southern Cafe and Music Hall. Are you excited?
Yeah, I'm very pumped. Yeah, we actually have a keyboard player that we flew in from England who's playing with us.
Oh, he better be good.
A friend of ours. And then Sam Whedon, who produced it, and Sebastian Green, who played drums. Will be on the CD release party as well. So we have a full 6-piece band on the 23rd. It's gonna be a good time.
All right, y'all better come out because this dude flew all the way in from Jolly Old England. So came to
Jolly Old
House.
England.
All right, then fill the halls there. Sorry.
The Currys.
David needed the a side lot of the glass. More coffee today. That's all I'm saying.
Galen, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Appreciate
it. Well,
I'll
be back when you do the fourth album.
Sounds great.
You'll probably do it at the bottom of a subway station
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, get more and more rusted.
Yeah. More acoustics.
Oh, my God.
And then it'll be dope. Live feed cut out. All right. so we gonna do this red thing?
Wow. Yeah, as soon as I put on my glasses so I can actually see what I wrote. Because I'm old.
Let's got to get our old folks glasses on.
Yeah, I got to get my old folks glasses on because it's, you know, it's apparently it's a thing. I'm old now. All right. So the night that Hollywood celebrates film has come and gone, but the controversy it creates never stops. Although the past 2 years of the show and awards have gotten a little bit better, showcasing movies that show black people and blackness as the spectrum that it is, we still have work to do. Why do I say that? A black man can't dress as he wishes on the red carpet without commentary about his manhood. The first black designers won in two categories, and you can't tell me there weren't black designers before now. Since 1927. Come on, people. People pissed that Glenn Close didn't win after 7 nominations. There are black actors working their asses off in Hollywood every day who have never been nominated. Cecily Tyson has been wowing audiences for decades. And in 2019, this is the first time she gets an Oscar? No. And I don't see Glenn begging anybody for a job. She'd be fine. Word. We may have moved from black people accepting their Oscar in the back room where no one can see them, shout out to Hannah McDaniel, but we haven't crossed the finish line yet. Let's work backwards. Green Book. I think it's more than problematic that a movie that was supposed to highlight the genius and hardship of a black musician turns out to actually highlight the white man who drove him around so he wouldn't get killed. I think it is crazy that the director didn't even speak to this man's family in consultation with telling what was supposed to be his story. And by the way, how do you make a movie about a real person without ever speaking to their family? How do you go through an entire movie-making process without realizing there is family to speak to? White privilege. That's how. Only a white male director would be able to give the excuse of, oh, I didn't know he had family, and have that be acceptable. Like, how dare you tell the story of a black life without taking the actual person's life into consideration? How dare you? These 5 white men literally make me want to throw up in my mouth as they try to downplay the controversy of them being completely tone deaf and myopic in their approach to telling a black story. And this is the perfect illustration of why white people should not tell black stories. You don't know what you're doing and you miss the mark 100% of the time. Stop it. You hear me? Stop it now. Spike Lee. I had the rare and wonderful pleasure of speaking to Spike via telephone during the final stages of production of Black Klansman. And what you saw on that stage is all Spike. He is all the way himself at every moment, and I love him for it. He should have won an Oscar way before now, and it saddens me that he had to make a movie that Hollywood could see as acceptable in white households before they would give him a statue. I also know that although he's happy, he knows at the end it means very little, because tomorrow the same people who praised him and handed him that thing will turn down his next project because it's too black or too controversial. And we also know what Spike will continue to do is pushing to tell black stories from our perspective. Much love, brother. And by the way, that show of black love, black male love on the stage was fire, and I love it. Regina King, girl, you've been holding it down in Hollywood for years, and it brought me to tears to watch your speech. You were dignified and thankful. Bless you, sis. And maybe now these children who don't know will pick up more Baldwin, more Lord, more Hughes, more Dubois, more Newton, and more Malcolm. We need to be sure our children are reading not just what they have to in order to pass a test in English, but what they need to pass through life. And if you have black skin, the authors I just named and so many more are a moral imperative. We need to know that for our ancestors who were forbidden to read and write, doing both of those things voraciously is a revolutionary act. And that is how you become an honest to goodness OG. Oh, Rami Malek. Oh, son, you have been a force ever since you stepped into the viewfinder of a camera. Electric. And I am so glad that you highlighted that you are the son of immigrants. Freddie was embraced by white culture, but he never forgot where and who he came from. And although I had issues with the film storytelling and the obvious omissions from Freddie's life, I am glad he was played by an actor who has also never forgotten who and where he came from. Oh, my God. Mahershala Ali. Brother! I have loved you for years. I fell in love with you on the 4400. I've followed you ever since. Moonlight was the most beautifully crafted character, and I enjoyed every single second. Plus, a dark-skinned brother who can pull off the Malcolm X post-Mecca hat will always be number one in my book. I have not seen the movie due to my distaste for how it was made and who made it. However, I applaud your work always. And we all know capitalism is a thing and we all got to eat. You keep pushing, my brother. Much love. Finally, we need to talk about Billy Porter. I have never seen anyone look more fierce on a red carpet. Never. Full stop. Anyone saying anything about him not being masculine, etc., can sit all the way down. I am amazingly proud that he was paying homage to a ballroom icon, Hector Extravaganza, and that Black Twitter showed him so much love. Let's face it, he slayed that runway, honey. There will always be someone hating how beautiful we are, but whatever. I would like to pose a question that we as black people should discuss and consider. Is the performative aspect of our lives a detriment to us due to its root in minstrelsy? Is our need to be the center of attention rooted in the way masters would get black men liquored up and watch them fight to the death? And if we take part in it, even when celebrating ourselves, are we continuing the slave tradition and therefore putting emphasis on the wrong thing? Are we still, in 2019, performing a cakewalk to get Masada like us? I don't ask this to take away from Billy's fierceness at all. I thought that gown was fire. But I just want all of us to be clear about how and why we do things and what impact it has and can have on our performative lives. And that's the rant.
Can I say that I
Didn't watch the Oscars.
I didn't watch the actual show.
I just caught the after
yeah, I didn't
Twitter
watch the
explosion,
show.
But I heard about Regina King.
I saw little clippets, you know, on YouTube and stuff.
Regina King brightened my day ever since 227.
Right?
That girl's been
oh my
amazing.
God, I love her. I love her.
Yeah. Spike should have won with Malcolm X. Should have won with Do the Right Thing. But hey,
right?
We'll give him. Yeah, I mean, I. All right, one more note before I go. I just kind of hate this kind of like, we're just going to give you the Oscar because we should have given you the Oscar like five like things ago. Because they did that with Denzel. They did that with,
yep.
you know, they do it with
yep.
a lot of folks. They did it with Leo. And I'm just like, yo, just give him, just do it now before
do
it's
the,
too late.
How about we do the right thing? How about we do the right thing?
And with that, it's not a sandwich, it's a wrap. That's homegrown. We like to thank Galen Curry. Who was just here? Edward Warwick White! Oh my God, he was just here. It seemed like such a long time ago. Thank you so much for being on the show. We'll be back next week. Sunday morning wake-up call is next. And I love you, Leslie.
I love you, David.
I love you, Clinton.
I love you, Clinton.
Clinton's like, eh, whatever.
And I'll see y'all. He's been so
violent. Take it easy, y'all.
Peace.
This has been Homegrown. Our opening music is from Spit It Out, Inc. Our event music is by Positive Collective. We're listening right now again to the Currys. This is Los Angeles from their new album, The Side of the Glass. Any complaints about Homegrown should be directed to our attorneys at the fine Lithping Law Firm of Tochterman, Overman, Munson, and Burke. Legal services that wrap around you like a thong. Remember to keep your dial on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
She's cast on me. Here I stand, hat in hand, between the hills and sea. Los Angeles, will I ever be free?
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.